Welcome to the show. I'm James.
I'm David.
I'm Riley.
And today we are discussing Rings of Power.
Rings of Power!
No. No Gandalf.
He's in it.
Episodes 1 and 2. We'll laugh. We'll argue. We might get a little too into it. But at the end of the day, they're just whatever this is.
Two episodes of a TV show.
Based on a book that's more like an encyclopedia. Was that a spoiler alert?
Yeah.
Big spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
I mean, I feel like anyone who's watching this would probably be watching the show as well, but...
We'll see.
Don't spoil it. Watch
next
the show
week,
first.
Galaxy Quest.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's David's favorite movie time.
Heck yeah.
The audience loves when we cover David's favorite movies.
I
have great taste.
That's one of my favorite movies as a kid.
It's fantastic.
I never watched it.
What?
It is the best Star Trek
movie. You are
in
for a treat,
or
James.
Is it?
It looked lame to me when the alien in the trailer, he's like, we need your help. I was like, I'm out of here. But I didn't understand satire because I was a child.
Right. Yes. Okay. But this week,
it's Rings of Power all day. So David, give me a rating out of 10 is what I would normally say, except you want to do something different this
week.
I
want to do something different. Because it's only the first two episodes. I don't think it's appropriate to rank it. Instead, I'll give a percentage likeliness that I'm going to keep watching. I realize now that my slogan doesn't exist. I started it, so I'll start the sentence what I did, and then we'll end there. There are as many reasons to dislike Rings of Power as there are to like it.
That's a full sentence.
That's a full sentence. That's it. Mm.
So what's your percent likelihood to continue watching?
100%. I am actually excited to keep watching this. It's not like the best show ever. There's a lot of flaws, and I'm sure we're going to get into it. But it's nice to have like a good fantasy show that isn't trying to shock you at every turn.
With penises?
With penises and murder. And it's like constantly trying to like make you suffer.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about this show. Is it's a nice show to watch and it's got really cool effects and like okay stuff happening. There's some good stuff, but I'm excited to keep watching.
As in it's fantasy before Game of Thrones came onto the scene.
Yes. Everything now is just like, we got to be like Game of Thrones, yeah. But...
Everybody, people like fantasy, but what they really want is fantasy with boobs.
Yeah. Well, and like dead babies and shit.
Yeah.
Riley?
Horrible things.
I don't mind the boobs.
Well, sure.
I don't like the
no
babies.
One does.
You give us, Riley, you give us whatever you want to give us.
I did give it a rating. My slogan, it's not really a slogan, but it's like a summary. Well, it's more Lord of the Rings that feels kind of Lord of the Ringsy, but also very Disney Star Warsy. I'm giving it a 6.5 out of 10. That's just for the first two episodes. Okay? I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. I think I was like, I'm going to watch this because we're doing it for the podcast. Otherwise, I probably would have waited and saw what people said about it before I checked it out. Mm-hmm. So I went in expecting like just middle of the road. I was like, it could be really good. It could be really bad. I enjoyed it more than I expected to. But at the end of the day, there are still some things that I'm like, okay, this is fan fiction at the end of the day. You know what I mean?
100%. Tolkien,
but it's enjoyable.
And is he rolling in his grave?
They've gotten a lot of the stylistic things right.
Yeah,
that's enough. James, go.
Imagine the Lord of the Rings, but even slower and longer, and definitely less compelling. On the bright side, though, at least nearly all the main characters are still white. Huh?
Okay.
Just joking. Being
that's irony.
Being facetious there. I think too much oxygen has already been taken up by the race discussion on this project, but I feel like we do have to talk about it. But let's just save it for the back half. Let's focus on the show.
Yeah.
What's interesting about this one is that I think most people are coming from deep familiarity with the movies, and then when you see it as a TV show, it really is easy to see the differences between a movie and a TV series.
Right,
you're
right.
Like, oh, there's a main character, but not like the protagonist. Mm-hmm. And like, I can see a story is forming, but it takes 3 hours before I know what the show is about. Whereas in the movie, it's like, we're 10 minutes in, it's Frodo, the ring, let's go.
Yeah.
And I like that kind of pace. That's why I'm finding the show just like kind of less compelling. But there's enough baggage being brought in by the viewer. Like, we know from the intro of the Lord of the Rings movies that they make these rings and then it all goes to shit. The rings are distributed among these different races and then the story of the Lord of the Rings ensues. So bringing that in keeps me interested, right? Because I'm reading into things and I'm waiting for that eventuality.
You have some plot point that you know is happening at the end that's kind of pulling you towards it, regardless of what they're doing.
There's like those moments where it's like a panning shot over the army and it lands on Sauron, and you're like, oh yeah, I like Sauron.
Yeah,
oh
yeah. Sauron.
Remember Sauron?
Sauron.
He's all spiky.
Spiky boy.
Anyways, Let's talk more about it after this message from our sponsors, starting with Vessi Footwear. Do you hate wet socks as much as I do? No, you don't. Oh. I hate it. I hate the sound even.
James.
Vessi Footwear makes lightweight, breathable, and most importantly, water-resistant shoes, so no more wrinkly toes. You ever look at your toe? Anyway, the Dynamex material not only keeps your feet dry, keeps the trench foot out, but keeps them warm in the winter and cool in the summer.
The imagery.
The stretchy design shows that comfort is at the forefront, or forefoot, at times, making you forget you're even wearing shoes. This is a new copy. This is... Vessi makes cruelty-free products right down to the glue. Their shoes are 100% vegan. Your feet deserve a little treat, so click the link below and grab a pair today. You won't eat our meat, but you glue with our feet.
Do not let your feet eat meat.
Remember that Simpsons episode?
Nope.
Thanks to Secret Lab for sponsoring this video. Secret Lab chairs are designed to keep you comfortable for those long nights of work and play and Lord of the Rings rewatches. Their Titan Evo 2022 series chair offers four-way lumbar support. It comes with a magnetic memory foam head pillow, and it's offered in different upholsteries like hybrid leatherette, soft weave fabric, and Nappa leather, the official leather of the proto hobbits. Best of all, a 5-year extended warranty is included with a 49-day return policy. You're covered if anything goes wrong, so learn more about Secret Lab at lmg.gg/secretlabtjm. Thanks to Storyblocks for sponsoring today's video. Ever needed a quick clip for a video but didn't have the capacity to make it yourself? Storyblocks helps you bring your stories to life without sacrifice due to time, budget, or resources. There's over a million royalty-free assets for you to choose from, including 4K HD footage, Adobe templates, music, images, and a wide array of diverse and inclusive content. We're talking Indian hobbits. There are subscriptions for every budget, so you can choose the plan that works for you. From their unlimited all-access plan that gives you unlimited video and audio downloads to enterprise licensing so your entire company has access to assets as you need them. We actually use Storyblocks at Lions Tech Tips as we don't always have time to go out and shoot the perfect B-roll footage. So take your videos to the next level, the level that our videos are at, by checking out Storyblocks today at storyblocks.com/TJM.
Do, 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 do.
Ah. I thought that was a Rick Roll for a second there. All right. What happens in the first two episodes, Riley?
Thousands of years before the events of The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, but in a different timeline, separate from the books or movies. Did you know?
Different canon.
They're saying?
This is a different canon because of rights and stuff. We'll get into that.
Oh.
The ancient elf Galadriel vows to continue her brother Finrod's search for Sauron, servant of the defeated Dark Lord.
Can I just
Morgoth.
Say Finrod is a good porn star name?
Finrod, yeah. Well, he's got a pinner.
He does
small.
The he does Finn, the like swimming, Finnish? I don't know. Swimming scenes.
All right, go ahead.
The High King Gil-galad is kind of sick of her insisting that Sauron lives, so he sends her and her elf squad to sail to the undying lands of Valinor. But at the last second, she jumps ship and starts swimming back to Middle-earth. Meanwhile, the elf Arondir and his forbidden love interest, the human healer Bronwyn, discover that orcs are attacking human villages. Arondir is captured while Bronwyn convinces the townspeople to leave their village after slaying an orc with her son Theo, who also finds a broken sword bearing Sauron's mark. Pokey. Elsewhere, two curious Harfoots, Nori and Poppy, discover a strange man inside a meteor crater. He's confused and can't speak their language, but uses magic and fireflies to indicate he's searching for a constellation of stars. And the half-elf Elrond is sent to help the great smith Celebrimbor build a powerful new forge, so he seeks help from his friend, the dwarf prince Durin. Durin is pissed that Elrond missed 20 years of his life, but Durin's wife Disa convinces him to hear Elrond's proposal. Back to Galadriel now, she comes across human survivors of a shipwreck who are promptly eaten by a sea creature, save for Halbrand of the Southlands, who explains that he was fleeing from orcs. Man and elf work together to survive a storm aboard a raft and are eventually rescued by...
A silhouette.
The shadow people. The shadow sea people.
So Elrond's...
That's the Numenoreans.
You said Elrond's half-elf?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, he's half-elf. He's descended from Beren and Lúthien, who are the original? Or I think there are two lineages of half-elf people. Beren and Lúthien and another one, I forget.
What other half are they?
Human.
What?
What do you mean?
Why does he get to live so long? That's
not, that's because not fair. Because this is the gift of the half-elf. The half-elf can choose to be immortal or mortal.
Wow, I'm glad you're here.
And Elrond chose to be immortal, but his brother Elros chose to be mortal, and he...
Who would want to live with a name like that?
More like Elrond.
And Elros, half-elf becoming a mortal, was the basis for the Numenoreans, I believe.
Oh.
That might be but I think it's right.
Tell me about the Silmarils.
I don't know much about the Silmarils. Okay. I never read the Silmarillion, but that doesn't matter because this show, as I alluded to, is not based off the Silmarillion,
yes.
as many might think it is. It's based
I really thought it was.
Because they needed, Amazon needed separate license rights. They needed to license separate rights to access the Silmarillion content.
Yeah.
So they only have rights to what Tolkien wrote about in the Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, and the appendices.
Oh.
So this is all based on the kind of like background, you know, notes in the bibliography, notes.
That's crazy.
about this period.
Wow. That means there's someone out there who was like, fuck you, Jeff Bezos, and all your Amazon money. Get out of here.
Well, no,
the rights just got handed over to Embracer Group? Who was it?
Yeah. So this, I mean, we're talking about
Mike Myers, actually.
This is actually really interesting and a good background to know going into this, because the Tolkien estate has never, like, no one has owned the whole rights to Tolkien. Every time there was an adaptation, they had to license the rights from the Tolkien estate. And so that's the same thing that's happening here, because it was prior to the Embracer Group. But the Embracer Group has now acquired the Tolkien estate, or they've acquired the rights to everything.
Own the rights.
So they own all the rights.
But not the books.
No, they do.
Not the publishing rights.
But they were all of them deceived.
Okay,
for there was another
rights.
Group
I forget.
Who had the rights.
But basically, if anyone who wants to make a Lord of the Rings thing, like the situation is the same, but instead of licensing directly from the Tolkien estate, now they'll have to license it from the Embracer Group.
Did you guys know how much Amazon paid for the rights to produce the show?
No.
$250 million.
Wow.
So this show
just
is...
Just the rights.
The show is current.
The whole budget is $500 million?
It's currently estimated at about $1 billion.
I mean, that's not
so
the budget, you mean?
Yeah, the budget. So I can't imagine that is not the most expensive show of all time. Maybe the most expensive media, like single
entity
media
thing.
Entity.
I mean, they probably figured that that's cheaper than buying the whole thing, like buying the franchise. In the same way that Disney bought Lucasfilm.
Well, I was under the impression is that they would not sell any of the rights. Like, that was just not a choice that was available, but...
$250 million. They're gonna have to make so many seasons of this.
Yeah.
Holy.
Are they?
I don't know if I want that.
Apparently, they're planning for 5 seasons.
All right, let's talk about the show. I think the like number one, everyone will agree, best thing they did in this show is the production design.
Yeah.
Like Khazad Dûm, man, it's like so sick.
Khazad Dûm is super cool.
It looks so dope.
It's great, especially because like I was talking to my brother about this, and he was like, "Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that." The Lord of the Rings is like post-apocalyptic in a way because you find all these ruins. You find like they get to Khazad Dûm, but it's been like destroyed by orcs. But it's like almost like a zombie vibe. Like you know, a great evil is coming. The land is dying. It's kind of post-apocalyptic.
Sure.
And in this one, we see Middle-earth in its prime.
Even when the ring is found by like Gollum, like in that Galadriel reads that like the preamble in Fellowship of the Ring. Says the ring sat at the bottom of that riverbed for 4,000 years. That's post-apocalyptic AF.
Yeah, man. I was trying to like look up the timeline because I'm a bit of a Lord of the Rings nerd, but like not nearly as much as some other people. I was talking to the guys in the engineering team, and they were like, actually, this and this and this, and I was like, I had no idea. I was schooled, but I was trying to look at the timeline, and I'm like, how long are the years? And it's confusing because when you go to the one wiki or whatever. That all the ages have their own dating scheme. So it's like TA, third age, 1500 or whatever. It could be thousands of years before FA, first age, 1500. But like when you just glance over things, it's hard to...
And this show is set during the second age, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So anyways, there's like... I don't even know, like 10,000 years or more, like on the whole span of things. But they're compressing this timeline so that things are happening in the second age quicker and closer together than they do in the actual canon.
No.
Sorry.
Production design. Costumes are good.
Yeah, I think like
it's so easy to get on a tangent with
lore.
There's
some really good design stuff too, like when they're in the elf forest and it's like the elf warriors that have died that are carved into
that
the trees.
Cool.
It looks so cool. There's like those little details that are there. I know some people are like zeroing in on some costumes to be like, it looks like tinfoil. This looks like a costume shop. And I'm like, no, it doesn't.
No.
And people use like shitty low bitrate Twitter video to criticize a 4K HDR produced thing. And I'm like, everyone just chill.
I feel like the obvious... Did you guys watch Wheel of Time?
No.
No.
Okay, so I watched... I think I watched the vast majority of it. I might have skipped the last like couple episodes because I was just like, I don't care about this. That show was really bad with the clothes and stuff. Like armor looked like kind of plasticky and stuff. But in this one, I'm like, that was initially what kind of blew me away. I was like, this, at least in some of the stylistic elements, it really feels like a continuation of the movies.
It looks expensive too. Like the close-up shot of that hammer that Elrond was using to do that competition. It's like that hammer looked awesome.
Yeah.
And like even just some of the shots and stuff that they use are really what am I thinking of? What's the word?
Beautiful.
It recalls the Lord of the Rings.
Redulant.
I like that.
Sure.
Stinks of Jackson.
In that scene particularly when they're like hitting the rocks with the hammers and stuff and it's like going up into the audience members, like these super wide angle shots going up on people's noses and whatnot, and they're like, I'm just like, this feels super...
Jackson-esque.
It's super transparent that they are like emulating that, but I appreciated it.
I think it's almost to a fault where this starts to have the...
A little bit,
snake kind of eating its own tail, where it's like, oh, we're trying to recreate the Jackson thing, and so they can't produce anything that feels wholly original.
I think they did, though. There's a couple cuts in particular that were really... that stood out to me, and they seem like a new direction. For example, and this was like a hit pick of mine, but when... she's about to decapitate that orc, and then it just hard cuts to her slamming the head on the table.
Yeah, that was cool.
It was like, that was a new voice.
Yeah.
And it was an awesome cut.
Yeah. The one of the first shots, well, after the prologue, which was too long, but one of the first shots after that is the elves climbing the ice. And at first, I was kind of like, when I saw that shot in the trailer, I'm like...
that looks like a video game.
Yeah, this doesn't feel very good. But then it goes into this sequence where it's like, they clearly like built something and we're seeing like elves like in the second age, you know, in their prime, like climbing up this ridiculous mountain that you would like... it seems like superhuman and they have capes and it's blowing in the wind and the music was swelling like really well. I was like... that was a really good intro to the whole thing.
You know, for me, I actually had opposite feelings.
On that ice bit?
Yes. I was thinking, see, this is exactly why no one will care about this show. Because I was thinking, when we have shots like this in The Lord of the Rings, that, you know, they're walking right before they go to Moria and they're trapped on the mountain. And we're like, oh man, those poor little hobbits out there against the elements. This is so hard. And they're on this crazy mission. Oh,
yeah.
And I feel for them and relate. And like, that looks like awful. Whereas here, I'm like, oh, here's these superhuman people who can just easily climb up this. And there are... on a mission I know nothing about, and I don't care. I was just like, look at them climb for God knows why.
Okay, you know what? I take that. I'm not going to argue really with that because that is, I'd say that's valid. Because the reason why we should care about these things is because what it means. And this was, there wasn't a ton of meaning here. It just kind of looked cool and felt Lord of the Ringsy. So I was like, I think I was like...
if anything, we were already told that their mission is meaningless. So it's just like...
were we?
I'm not sure if we knew by then that they were searching for nothing, but...
it was like we knew that people were saying, oh, I don't know if Sauron's still out there, but Galadriel's still looking for him. So I didn't, at that point, we were like, I don't know.
But I feel like that to me... let's stay on the positive.
Yeah, so I think I came in feeling kind of skeptical, and I was like, all right, let's see what you got, Amazon's Rings of Power. And then when they hit me with some of this, like... really reminiscent, that was the word I was looking for earlier, things that are really reminiscent of the original Lord of the Rings trilogy, I was like, okay,
like maybe. Those elven cityscapes.
At the very least, yes. Yeah, they looked really great.
Those are probably just full CG now.
Yeah,
for sure. It would be cool if they did like miniatures or whatever, but I'm
sure... that's a lot of work.
I hope they did. Apparently, Weta Workshop was involved at some point.
Good.
I don't know if they were, that they stayed involved, but anyways, I really appreciate it at the very least. Even if the whole show turns out to be horrible, I really appreciate that. Clearly, there are people with love for the original trilogy who are really trying. You can tell that they're really trying to do right by at least the style of it, you know? And I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's definitely the strength of the show, is the aesthetic and the atmosphere and all that stuff. What do you guys think of like the characters themselves?
I don't love Galadriel that much. She's, to me, clearly the main character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting to kind of take her out of being an iconic character into being like this young kind of brash version of herself. And it's, I know some people are mad about that, that it's like, oh, she's supposed to be like, you know, a proud elf. But I think it's cool that we're seeing this younger side of her, like this totally unfinished version of her.
But it's kind of weird because, I mean, I'll say in any situation where you have like these immortal characters, and in the Lord of the Rings, kind of all the elves, with the exception of Legolas, are depicted as sort of these like otherworldly. We don't really know what it's like to be an elf. We see them from afar, and they have cool weapons and architecture, and they were like the old people. But they're mysterious. And anytime you take like a mysterious character in one one entry, and then like we're gonna flesh them out more, we're gonna show you their daily life. Mm-hmm. It's gonna be more mundane. It's gonna take some of the magic out of
like
it.
The Jedi.
Sure. Yeah. And the more we learn about the Jedi, the more we were like, hey, wait, actually the Jedi are bad, maybe. And so I definitely felt some of that. And it's like a little disappointing to have some of that magic taken away.
Well, I think that I really felt that with Elrond, where there's like this darkness in movie Elrond where you're like, oh, like what happened to him? Why is he this way? Why is he so jaded?
Right.
And now we're seeing him like this nicer,
yeah, when he was first introduced I was like, that's not Hugo Weaving, this guy doesn't have the edge.
No. The casting was really interesting.
Well, they probably just watched Game of Thrones and like, he's a young Ned Stark, he could be a young Elrond.
Oh, is that the guy who played young Ned Stark?
I will say that Elrond's probably my favorite character in the show. I like him. I just my first impression was like,
I feel like a big reason why I like Elrond in the show though is that he goes and meets Durin and Durin's wife and stuff, and he has like that kind of more charming plot.
He's like this diplomatic kind of.
Yeah, and he's a politician.
Citizen. Yeah, exactly.
Whereas Galadriel so far has had kind of, I think, the most boring plot. Like, I was excited when she was going to go to Valinor. I was like, oh, cool. I like this more abstract side of Lord of the Rings. Like, I was expecting the show to be first age, like more primordial version of the world, and not this kind of more formed version. And so I was excited for like, oh, we're gonna do like weird stuff. But then it goes back to the ocean plot, and I find it super stupid. And like, she's
second episode when she's on the raft, that sucks.
Yeah, that's kind of annoying.
I was like, this is episode two, guys. Damn, yeah, this is not good enough.
They like, you watch episode one, and you're like, man, hardly anything happens. And then episode two comes around, you're like, oh, literally, almost nothing happens.
Not on that storyline, anyway.
Well, on any of the storylines, everyone just kind of stays where they are.
The elf romance, elf human romance, there's like stuff happening there. They're kind of like discovering the
orcs.
Oh,
yeah, that's true. Yeah,
that one I think is the most interesting. I don't love those characters as much. Like, I don't feel as invested in them.
Well, they don't give you a lot.
Let's get into them, but I wanted to say something about Elrond because kind of missed that thing. It was initially jarring to me to see the different characterization of him because, as we're saying, he's really jaded and kind of like,
but that makes sense.
Right. It does make sense, but it is jarring still to be like, this doesn't really feel like Elrond because he's almost like a completely different character. He's like, hello, my friend. Oh, stop your silly quest, you know.
But in Fellowship, though, it's like, A couple thousand years later, and B, what does he say in Fellowship? It says like, I was there the day men failed.
I
saw some shit. That shit hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, and the more the show goes on, I got used to him, and I liked it. By the end of it, I was like, all right, I'm on board with this.
I think he's just,
because I want to see the arc.
Yeah, I think that they have a lot of potential with him, and I'm excited to see what they do, but it's one of those things where like I just don't really connect those two characters in my head. It's just two separate beings.
I feel like they could have done a little bit better of a job trying to find someone who looked sort of like Hugo Weaving.
And I found that interesting that they've gone with this aesthetic of elves having short hair. Because like that's such an iconically Lord of the Ring thing that set the elves apart.
And there's
their
a few
long
different
hair.
Elves with short hair.
Yeah, and I can see how they came to that creative choice where they're like, oh, like, you know, like we want to distinguish them. They've grown. They've become more
wise.
Hair
grows so slowly.
Yeah, you never cut it. Like some creative distinction.
Yeah,
but it makes them feel very much, especially with the characterization, as just humans with pointy ears.
Yeah, I can understand maybe like Arondir having a shaved head because he's like a military guy.
Yeah,
but I don't see why Elrond would have short hair. The other reason, the other thing about maybe explaining why Elrond feels kind of different, like he feels more human than other elves. Like he's kind of like, he doesn't give me that sort of like mysterious, like
ethereal
gravita.
Kind of.
Yeah. But he's a half elf. So maybe that's something. Maybe he's like, I don't feel as elvish today.
I'm elfish.
It's funny. I feel like the show, part of its big appeal is that it gives you kind of character name characters that you haven't seen in the flesh, you know, like Celebrimbor and stuff. But I never was like, that's cool. That's a cool take on Celebrimbor. I'm like,
what is that again? That's the city?
No, that's the dude who made the sword Andoril, or is that...
Oh, yeah, okay.
The Rings of Power.
He's the guy who forged the... Did he forge the Silmarils?
I'm not sure, but he's the other half of your character.
The esteemed engineer guy.
He's the smith,
in
the
war
yes.
of... In a... What is it? Shadow of Mordor. That's how I know him.
He's the guy... Oh, right, he's in Shadow... I never played those
he's
games.
He's like your phantom side.
He's going to make the Rings of Power under the influence of Sauron.
Okay.
Wow.
But like this is kind of the thing when you go into this, it's like all of this lore has been established. So you're if you're going to the show being like, no spoilers,
if you
like,
go to the Reddit,
okay, but
on the Reddit for like r/Rings of Power, there's two different sticky threads. There's a for people who have read the book and for those who haven't. So in the thread for it's only what you've seen on the show so far, and the other one is the like the kind of stuff that you just said.
Ah,
interesting.
This is saying that he only made the first the three Elvish Rings of Power, but I thought
he did all of them.
I'm confused about that, so I'm not going to say one way or the other. But yeah, he's a smith, and he makes at least the Elven Rings of Power.
But I mean, even if you don't have any appendices or Silmarillion knowledge, if you're just like me, I've only seen the Lord of the Rings trilogy. I didn't even watch The Hobbit because I heard it was bad, and I didn't want to tarnish my view of Lord of the Rings. So, but even with the knowledge we get from the trilogy, we know they're just from the prologue, they're gonna make these rings. Yeah. And so when they're like, "Oh, we're gonna make a forge," we're like, they're gonna use the forge to make
the
rings. And it's probably Sauron putting them up to all this, well, and it's gonna go bad. So
I think that's my biggest problem, and this is kind of an inherent problem to prequels, is this doesn't set up stakes outside of the Lord of the Rings. Like, it's exactly the same stakes. They're just doing a longer ramp up to it.
But that doesn't mean it won't be good. Like, Rogue One suffers from that same thing, and everyone likes Rogue One.
I don't like Rogue One.
Everyone but David loves Rogue One.
No, I hate all...
Rogue One is objectively the best Disney Star Wars movie.
We're not going to talk. We have to talk about
he
it.
He uses the word
but
objectively.
But I said Star Wars movie. I would say Last Jedi is the best if it was a Star Wars movie, but it's not.
Fair.
Okay.
What the... fuck, it's going on.
for
reference, viewer, go listen to our Star Wars episodes.
But I think that's my big problem is, like, this is, like, for better or for worse, like you said, it carries in the baggage of the Lord of the Rings, but it's also too reliant on that. And I think I'm annoyed that it's, like, I know what the stakes are from the beginning, and I know that, like, this can't resolve it. It'll just kind of flesh it out a little bit more, but I didn't feel the need for... something I already know to be fleshed out just a little bit
right,
more.
Right.
I don't think that... I was really hoping it'd be set before this conflict was brewing, because that's the main pull of this show, is this conflict, I know how it ends.
You know what? I don't think... I agree that the stakes are completely fleshed out, because, for example, we know that they're going to get these Rings of Power, but we don't know what... Like, we could build up a character that you love and then see the effect that the rings have on that character. And then you could go, oh my God, I knew that. I never understood the depth of like the consequences of these rings being made. And you could still really be on an emotional journey.
I think that's fair. And I think that like that is what is the best possible take on this, is that they do stuff that we've imagined but haven't been able to experience. I just don't know if I'm excited for that. But maybe the show can win me back on that element. I don't know. As soon as the prologue started... Also, like, the prologue sucks, where it's like...
Prologue sucked.
Like, the stupid philosophical meandering that means nothing, and then it's, like, over okay visuals. But I was like, oh, okay, just shut the fuck up and, like, let's get into
it. I guess they wanted to start it with Galadriel monologue, just like the movies, but
it's not Cate Blanchett, man. Cate Blanchett.
The problem with doing that, I feel like what they should have done is have, like, another elf do the prologue or something, because then you would... It's thematically connected, where it's like we have this timeless... person, you know, describing vast events over the vast ages of Middle Earth and stuff. I think that would have been better, because Morfydd Clark, I think that's her name, the actress who plays Galadriel. She is doing a pretty good job. Like, I was happy with her casting.
I saw Galadriel in her. Like, it was like a different edge, but
yeah,
I saw
she definitely
it.
Has. She's. I can see her doing the sort of squinty eyes, like, and I'm saying something really intense and blah blah blah. And I'm like, okay, so. You're really good at pulling that aspect of Galadriel. I don't know how good she is at pulling the sort of like, and I'm sort of mysterious as well.
There was one scene where I was asking myself, and I think I said it out loud, like, is she a bad actor? And it was, I think, her and Elrond talking, and she was just doing overacting, and I think she was trying to replicate those mannerisms just a little too hard, and it took away from her natural expression.
It's like an impressionist who latches on to like a couple things about someone and they can reproduce that really well, but then the rest of it is kind of lackluster. And as they're talking, you're kind of like, I'm losing it, I'm losing it. And then they come in back and like, get to the chopper! And you're like, that's Arnie.
I think she is a good actor, and when she is doing herself more naturally, it works, and I kind of lose track of the world and I just see her.
Yeah.
Yeah, but where's the seductive aspect of Galadriel?
She's got to grow into it, man.
She's got to grow into it. She needs that like MILF energy first. Another 1,000 years.
We got to stay on Galadriel here for a second. While we're here, let's talk about Galadriel.
Wait, but pause before we do that, because you were talking about when she speaks to Elrond, and there was a bad dialogue moment there where I was like pissed. They have like a pretty good dialogue, and it culminates in Elrond being like, put up your sword. And then she's like, without it, what am I to be?
Yeah.
And we're like, okay. And then he goes, what you've always been, my friend. I'm like, what? What the hell is that? That was, to me, such a dissatisfying ending to this
Pretty good, this exchange.
Like, what you've always been, my friend.
Because
she was just gone for like 100 years looking for Sauron. Like, when is the last time you guys even hung out? Like,
that's nothing to an elf. That was one of the best parts of the show, but we'll talk about that. Yeah, that's kind of a lame thing, because what is he really trying to get her to do? He's not trying to be like, do this because you're my friend.
Like, and that's a big part of her identity.
Yeah.
If you're not a warrior, you're my buddy.
It's like all the elves. But like, that's so funny, because all the elves want to do is just chill and like be ageless. You know, they're just like, we just want to walk around and have our hands in our robes.
Sing
and be like
together.
Yes, interesting.
Yeah. Anyways, that dialogue just pissed me off. But now you go.
Okay.
Galadriel.
So Galadriel, as we said, casting pretty good. Characterization, we can see some of Galadriel in her. Why? And I promise you, I'm not one of these like rating 1 out of 10 on IMDb guys. Okay, I'm not like, I gave it a 6.5. Why does she have to be so badass? And like to the detriment of the other characters.
Use it. Use the word. Say the word.
She is sort of Mary Sue.
Well, I actually wondered this too. Because
she's like an immortal being who's like one of the most powerful elves in history.
But when that troll comes out, she like kicks its ass.
Yeah, but like, nothing... we saw Legolas fucking take out an elephant with 100 people by itself.
Right, sure. But the key there was that Legolas wasn't the only one doing that.
He took it by himself. That elf? The elephant?
Oliphant.
The Oliphant.
Oh,
Timothy Oliphant.
Yeah, but we also see like Rohirrim taking them out. We also see like other characters. I don't know. He's not like Legolas single-handedly defeats all the Oliphants.
Yeah, right. But that,
it's a group effort.
Your argument is completely undercutted by, in this show, other elves in her cadre are fighting this troll.
They get tooled.
Except not her. She just kicks its ass.
Exactly.
No, but she gets the help.
She's
runs
way better
the
than them.
What? No, that's my whole point, is that they have a whole squad of elf warriors. They get absolutely tooled. They do nothing to stop the elf at all. And then she comes in there and is like, guys, you idiots, this is how you do it.
She even does the thing where, like, the final blow, she's not even looking. She's like, shing, looking the other direction.
And so I'm like, listen.
Waiting for to hear the thud.
I love some great, cool action, you know? It's like, I wasn't, the only, I'm not asking for less Galadriel being a badass. I'm asking for more of the other stuff to kind of, like, equalize a little bit. You can show us that she's a really good warrior and that she's better than them without making the other people look like absolutely useless. It's like they're not even soldiers.
I think I agree there. I think that like that scene exists to show how cool she is. I don't think the problem is, it's not her doing that. It's that the elves just get like swept aside and that's the end of this.
And I would say that like I take it back. She's not a Mary Sue because it's like we do see her failing and struggling with things, right? It's like she fails at like making her case for Sauron and she's sent off, and then she like is forced because of her actions, because she's like, it kind of shows her being like a bad leader because of her actions. She's forced to jump into the ocean in the middle of nowhere and try to swim back.
What a badass. Middle of the ocean.
Well, at the same time,
sundering sea.
And at the same time, that's kind of like, this is maybe like a point of failure, but at the same time, she's a badass again because she's about to fucking swim across the whole sea.
I'm like, can she do that? Is she going to make it?
Yeah, I thought
she's buoyant.
I think that was a weird thing to do.
You're in the middle of the ocean.
It was a good start swimming. There was a raft.
It was a good sequence, though. the way that it was all put together, when the sky was opening up and the meteor was coming down, and just when the meteor hits, she jumps in the ocean. It was really well put together.
I
really liked the way that they designed the worm sequence as well. I thought it was very imposing, you know, kind of like see the worm under the raft and stuff. You have that big overhead shot, and that shot where she's swimming away and the worm's like devouring the people behind her. I thought that was actually kind of sick.
Yeah. It felt a little out of the blue, where it's just like,
it literally was.
Yeah, it just...
is that what that expression... I never even put that connection together.
Yeah, that makes sense, I guess. Out of the deep blue. But yeah, no, I in the moment, I wasn't like, whoa, come on. I was like, those are probably sea monsters in Middle Earth.
It's on the map, right under where it says Sundering Sea. There's like a little sea monster picture.
Yeah, and in our old map,
it's the thing that sunders.
Yeah,
it's what people imagined in the real world, but in Middle Earth, it's real.
And my feet tingling was triggered.
So
a couple of the shots made my feet tingle.
Like because you're scared of deep water kind of thing?
I'm not like especially scared. It's just having an effective sequence.
I will say I forgot that she does get knocked unconscious at the end of episode 2 and is rescued by Hallbrand. So that's like, but that's not really like her failing and like, it's just like, oh, something bad happened to me. Whoops. Yep. You know? But anyways.
I have to say, while we're on Hallbrand, if there is a romantic subplot with Hallbrand,
100% there is.
I'm going to fucking...
He's like, oh, good looking human guy with the hair in the front of his face.
Of course it is.
So fucking stupid, and the show does not need that.
Why not?
Fuck that. Lord of the Rings, one of the things that's great about Lord of the Rings is that there is a romance, but it's an established romance, and it's more this like tragic look at the consequences of romance. It's not like this new love of people like quipping and, you know, just like developing a romance. Like that's not what this story needs.
I will say I don't hate the idea of them having some romantic tension, but I will say that it is too much if there's also the Arondir-Bronwyn romance going on.
Yeah.
Two like, elf-human. We can't have two elf and human romances in the same show.
We haven't talked about that guy yet. Can we do that now?
Okay, let's talk about Arondir.
Man, he's boring.
Yeah.
He just has like a squinty eyes, like big blowjob pursed lips, but like not saying anything. Okay. I'm like, are they gonna fucking kiss? Or what?
No, because it's just tense right now. You gotta let it simmer.
But they
simmer.
Have a kid, don't they?
What?
That's
no?
not his kid? No.
Theo?
No, that's, I don't think that's his kid.
Oh, I thought it was.
I mean, maybe that'll be revealed later, but I don't. They would act different if they had already done it.
Also, hold on.
This is like they're just kind of testing the waters
with
each other.
So what if
we
have two of those plots in the show? That's so lazy and boring.
Exactly.
Not that this even matters anymore, but like, I don't think that kid looks like either of the parents. Like, if that's his two parents.
He sort of looks like...
Because she's like Persian.
He looks like indigenous, mixed, like New Zealand indigenous.
Oh, I thought he was like mixed race, like half black maybe. Or are you talking about the kid or the adult?
The kid.
Oh,
apparently the guy is Puerto Rican.
Sure. Okay.
But like, you know, he's mixed.
It's not
mixed
that important,
black,
but...
Whatever, I don't know.
That subplot...
He looks really cool.
He looks great.
I gotta say that, like, you know, we'll talk about the races thing, but when he was introduced, I was like, this guy is an elf. Like, he looks... He seems
statuesque.
Badass. He seems stoic.
Yeah.
He seems like he's
seen
some
shit. Oh, he's stoic already.
Yeah.
He's fucking Clint Eastwood.
Like, I kind of like that. I mean, like, I like that, you know, Bronwyn is this human healer and there's tension there. And, you know, humans are there like being their messy human selves, you know, like being dirty.
Those
and
are servants
chopping
of
up meat.
Morgoth. Like, those are ex.
They're descendants of men who were allied with Morgoth.
Okay,
or allied servants, I guess. Yeah.
So
whatever.
They're like the humans that would be on the elephant.
Yeah, like the from the east.
Yeah, those are Easterlings, and these guys are Southlanders.
No, but they're similar insofar as like they allied with the enemy.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I like that there's kind of like this messy human contrasted with this like, I'm a stoic elf and I don't get anything.
It makes sense that he's as stoic as he is. Because like not only is he an elf, but he's the elf that's going to just like stand there on a watchtower for 400 years just looking at nothing.
Yeah, and I appreciate that they contrasted that with the human thing, and then also his elf buddy, who's like a comedian, doing a bad British accent. But
what I don't get though is their love affair, their interest in each other, is established when we enter the story. It's not like they're discovering each other right now. It's kind of already they're kind of already having these meetings out back where people are like, oh yeah, you guys like each other, don't you?
But I don't think it's explicit that they are like definitely both people know that they're into each other. I think they're still kind of like testing the waters. They're still kind of like, oh, we're kind of friends. Like, oh, I've seen you talking to that human girl. But it's not like, oh, I love Bronwyn. I just wish, let's go away, Bronwyn. Let's run to Lindon.
Yeah. Okay, you're right.
Eregion.
Yeah. I liked the stuff, like the slowly uncovering the orc and like the going through the burrow. The another feet tingling activation was when he goes into the tunnel and it gets like really tight and then he dives into the water. That was very uncomfortable.
Especially when like if you're caving and you're in a tight tunnel like that and it gets wet and he just takes a breath and starts going, like you don't know that that terminates in
exactly.
You don't know there's oxygen ever again.
Yeah,
I've talked about this before in the podcast, but this is literally my nightmare. Like, I feel like I don't have phobias except for this specific thing where you're in a tunnel, submerged. You don't know where.
Have
it
you
opens.
Ever done it?
No, I went.
In the Philippines or Guatemala, I can't remember. I went caving once, and it was like this is a place they take people every single day, so they know that like you hold your breath, you go into this tunnel. It's 6 feet long, and you'll get on the other side, and there'll be a pool.
Yeah,
kind of just like in the show.
Yeah.
But you've never done it, so you got to like take their word for it, right?
And yeah.
Nah, it's creepy. You're like, what if my pants get stuck on a rock or something?
I hate it. I hate it. And then they make it even worse with the rats crawling all over them. Yeah.
That didn't make sense, though. Why would the rats go be toward the water?
Because I guess they don't like the orcs either.
They don't like water, though. Have you seen Titanic?
Rats don't like water? They like water.
They run away from them.
They're water rats.
All right. They got little flippers.
There are rats who like live in the water.
Rats with duck feet.
Wait, am I tripping? Water rats.
It's called a beaver.
That was my nickname in college. It's called a beef.
Any of 18 species of amphibious carnivorous rodents.
Jesus.
There's tons of water rats.
Okay. God damn. Yeah. Do not there want.
Do not swim ever
so
again.
What was the deal with the kid finding, is it a broken scepter or a broken sword?
Oh, it looks Theo. Like a broken sword. That's Sauron's broken sword?
But,
no, it doesn't. That hasn't happened yet.
I think it's just Morgul blade or something.
I was
maybe.
Really resisting putting subtitles on.
I had to put it on right away.
I didn't put them on because they were actually on in the first.
Why would you not have them on?
Well, because they were on by default in the first 5 seconds when I turned it on. And in the first 5 seconds, it was like the parenthetical closed captioning crap, which I hate. Why can't they just put English subtitles, not closed captioning? I don't want to see engine whirring, children
purring.
Yeah, sure. Horse brays in the distance. I don't want that. I just want the words they're saying.
Who's hooing?
And when I turned it on, it was Galadriel playing with his kids, and there was a bunch of background shit like that. And I was like, nope, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
And then for the rest of the show, I was like, should probably put this back on.
See, I really appreciate that stuff because I have to turn the volume down because my kid is right next door. And
in the next apartment?
A lot of the time, it'll be like door opens in the background or like sound of door opening. And I'm like, thank you, because I would not have heard that or known it happened.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's spoilers, though. I watched like a thriller or horror type movie the other day with subtitles on, and the subtitle comes up for like screams. Before the scream happened, and I was like, okay, there goes that jump.
And yeah, I think even for like twists and stuff, like some of it's supposed to be subtle and you're not really supposed to be made aware of something that was said, but the subtitle will make you hyper aware.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, all that to say, I didn't have subtitles on. I missed what happened when he was explaining to the other kid for the reason that he's opened up these floorboards and has found this thing.
Oh, yeah.
So what's the deal? He just found it somewhere?
Well, no, he found it buried there because their ancestors were servants of Morgoth. So then it's presumed that this whole area is full of such artifacts.
Okay.
And And then he feeds it some blood later and it grows a little bit.
You don't think it's of significance? Like, you don't think it's specifically like Sauron's tool? It's just a sword from that era?
It could be, I guess. I don't know.
I'm speculation that the reason the orcs were tunneling under there is that it's similar to the ring race looking for the one ring. It's like they want to reclaim that weapon.
Maybe.
I think that it must be of significant importance because it's like they wouldn't draw so much attention if it was just a random artifact. Like he would find a cache of artifacts, I think.
I feel like, I don't know, I feel like it didn't look that special to me.
Oh, really? It looks like a tower to me. It looks like Sauron's
tower. Yeah.
It looks like the mark.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I feel like I expected Sauron's weapon to be kind of like more grand.
But I don't know that it's a weapon. I think it could be just one of the tools that he's using when he's doing his alchemy.
Oh, it's 100% a sword.
It's a Mordor.
It could be like a scepter or something.
Pickaxe.
I don't think
he's a sorcerer.
A scepter with like a fully flat section. Like, I don't know. It
is
could
it
be
a sword?
Hey,
I don't know.
We'll know what it is. I don't know what it is. It doesn't really matter. But yeah,
let's talk about the Stranger though.
Yeah,
Stranger.
So is it for sure Gandalf, or could it be another wizard?
Well, actually, I've seen a lot of people speculating that it's Sauron, and I think it makes sense.
I've seen people thinking that he's Sauron, that Halbrand is Sauron. Well, and I don't think we've met Sauron yet. I think that Sauron will come later.
I think that's the twist that the show is. I'm kind of in the camp that it's Sauron. I actually just thought it was Gandalf. I just assumed it was Gandalf while I was watching, but I think that's the expectation they're going to eventually subvert, because we know that both Sauron and Gandalf are, what are they called? Those angels, starts with an M.
Maiar.
Yeah. So when the meteor comes down, you're like, cool. It's like this angel coming from heaven, and he's going to be like, now he's embodied in this foreign man flesh. He has to get used to it.
Yeah.
That's all Gandalf-y shit. That totally makes sense. He's a white guy with big beard. Looks like he could be Gandalf. He's like whispering to the fireflies. That's very Gandalf-y.
Oh, for sure.
But the biggest evidence that it could be Sauron is that the fire's not hot.
One of the engineering guys said this as well, and I was like, what does that have to do with anything?
Well, they established it in the show. Two other points.
In the
like,
Lord of the Rings? The movies,
in
you mean?
This show, in like...
They established that the fire didn't feel hot.
Yeah.
What does that have to do with Sauron?
They're like, our tortures aren't hot. The evil is sucking up the heat. And then there's another part where the same thing happens. They're like, oh, they go down into the tunnels, and then it's like, oh, it's not hot. So they do it three different times in the show. And one of the times is with a stranger. So
see, that's really cool if they do that.
I feel so dumb that I didn't pick up on that. But like, yeah, that's...
So I could totally see that happen where they're like, yeah, the audience has this... They bring in this baggage that... This like white guy with long beard, that's gonna be Gandalf, but he,
you know,
because
what?
They're both the Magi or whatever, but the frick they
Maiar.
Maiar, they both would enter the atmosphere in this same way. They both would have the experience of being these like fetal.
Except that Sauron has already been active in Middle Earth for a long time.
Yeah, but his like soul is just trying to get all the pieces together, right? Needs a body, needs a sword.
He wouldn't come crashing back down to Earth in a meteor if he was already in Middle Earth as like a spirit. He would just gather some stuff to him.
I have no idea.
Well, I do, and that's what Sauron, my friend, would do.
Okay,
but I mean,
the
show isn't super accurate to Tolkien.
No, but I mean, okay, here's my theory, all right? There's a chance that Halbrand might be Sauron, but because Sauron can shapeshift, right? At this point, he has that power. He loses it later, but so maybe there's a chance there. I feel like... At first, I was just like, that's Gandalf, you know, the stranger. Yeah. I'm like, it's super obvious. He's doing the, rah, 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 and then like the trees are bending in, and it's like that.
And he has a relationship with the hobbits.
Same thing happened. Yeah. Yep, right?
Totally makes sense.
So that is, those are strong arguments. There's also a chance that it could be Saruman, because maybe this is the first wizard to land like this. If people are kind of like, oh, we've never seen this meteor.
Yeah, but the hobbits, they haven't even seen like...
No, but they show
silverware
the other people.
Before.
They show the other races too, looking up and being like, "Huh?"
But I mean, even us, we know what a meteor is. But
I would still be like, "Oh,
sure." I mean, I don't know. So
the thing is, when he talks to those fireflies, it's so reminiscent of when Gandalf talks to the moth on top of
it is, but
Isengard.
But that could also just be because I mean, we see Saruman.
That's how wizards talk to animals.
No, I mean, I guess so. Presumably, but we also see Sauron in Lord of the Rings, kind of like singing to the mountains, being like, and that's how he caused the avalanche. Right. All of the magic in, well, not all of the magic, I guess, but a lot of the magic in Lord of the Rings is based on music. That's how. Eru Iluvatar, the like god in Middle Earth, and his Einar, which are like the angels under which the Maia are. They are Einar. Anyways, they create the world by singing. They go like.
What came first, Narnia or Lord of the Rings? Because that's how it works in Narnia too.
I think
it's also working Christianity.
I think Lord of the Rings came
the
first.
Word.
No, but he wasn't
God
singing.
Spoke,
God wasn't singing.
But
maybe
it's
he
the
was.
Word.
But
I wasn't sure. Yeah, he said, "Yeah." I mean, anyways,
but singing so much cooler.
I'm not sure which came first.
It's just talking more longy.
I think Tolkien started writing about Middle Earth before C.S. Lewis started about Narnia, but I'm not sure.
Dune comes after, and it's the best.
Anyways, he's singing to the firefighters, and it's like, okay, that could be any wizard. You know, they could probably all do that.
Well, right? I was thinking, I was like, oh, it'd be interesting if it was like Radagast or something, and his early exposure to creatures that are one with the forest would like point him into becoming like more of a nature focused.
Oh, yeah.
Wizard, but I think the most interesting is that if it is Sauron, if it's Gandalf, that's so boring.
There's no way it's Sauron.
That sucks.
Well, Sauron's way more in this story than Gandalf is. Like, Sauron's an established character in these two episodes already, so he's gonna appear.
But we also know Gandalf gets a ring of power at one point, although I guess maybe initially it goes to an elf. Anyways.
But if they're gonna have five seasons,
yeah,
we could have Tom Bombadil come in season three. We could have Gandalf show up at the end of season one to make us want to watch season two. Yeah.
I feel like it's likely that this may be one of the blue wizards. Like, you know, the wizard, one of the wizards that we haven't seen yet in the franchise. If it's Radagast, that would be dumb.
You'd be aghast.
I mean, it'd be one thing to like give us this red herring and be like, ooh, maybe it's Gandalf, and then
nope,
be like,
it's
Radagast, the worst one,
the brown.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, if it's, I would prefer it to be like Sauron or one of the blue wizards. Sure. If it's Sauron, I'll be upset. It could be, though.
Let's go through the wizards and rank which one we would be happiest.
Okay, anyways, but the Harfoots. Let's talk about the Harfoots.
Love them!
Yeah, I think, really like their
depiction. I think it's cool that they're, like I said, like proto-hobbits. Like, they're still just not hunter-gatherers. They're just gatherers. They're nomadic. They don't have, like, agrarian society yet.
Yeah.
Although, I guess the humans do, so these guys got to catch up. But I think it's cool.
I've seen some complaints that they weren't supposed to be here in the Second Age. There weren't supposed to be hobbits until the Third Age. But I'm like, okay, wait. Are you saying that the hobbits just like weren't on Middle Earth at all and then they just popped up?
Well, they're not hobbits. They're Harfoots.
Well, they are. Harfoots are one of three types of hobbits. So they're calling themselves Harfoots because I guess they haven't like come up with a name hobbit yet.
That's what I'm saying.
But
so it's like actually.
In the Third Age, the Harfoots, the Fallowhides, and the... There's another type that I forget.
Are they distinct, or is it just like they're divided by culture?
They're like cultural groups of the same type of of being of
they're
race.
All the same species.
Yeah, they're sub.
You got your French bulldogs, your golden retrievers.
I guess they would be like our human races.
Okay.
But they all mix together into hobbits, and the vast majority of them are Harfoots. In the Third Age.
Does this main character, like the Frodo one, the girl Frodo, is she, like, her last name is like Brandy something.
Brandy Foot, I think.
It sounds very reminiscent. Like,
Brandy
she's an...
Brook?
She's
Brandy
an ans-
Foot.
She's an ancestor.
What's the one in the actual...
Brandy... Well, the Brandy Wine River. Brandy Buck. Meriadoc Brandy Buck.
So it sounds like she's like an ancestor of them.
Yeah. And I think, like, it felt really hobbity. And I think that... That was another thing in the show where I'm like, okay, this feels like home a little bit because their accents are pretty good.
I saw some complaints.
Yeah.
It didn't really bother me too much.
But yeah, it didn't really bother me because
because you don't have that accent.
That's fair.
You're just like, yeah, that sounds British to me.
No, like mildly Northern Britain, Ireland.
Yeah, they're sort of like tongue-in-cheek kind of humor and the being silly.
I think
conservative.
Also overly serious.
It's the perfect amount of like, familiar but new, because it was fun looking at all the little details that are different than what the hobbits have and kind of being like and comparing it to what I have in my head.
Yeah,
but you're like, you said it tastes like mom's chicken noodle soup and you're like, all right, fuck yeah.
You need to have the hobbits in the show.
I like the
hobbits are the window.
You don't have to.
You do, because
you must.
The hobbits are the audience surrogate,
right?
Like, you're going on this big adventure with giant stakes and you're just out of your element. That's us.
So I feel about the Uruk-hai.
You're leaving the idyllic.
They don't have the Uruk-hai in the show. Then who do I identify with?
I would say that you could do the show without hobbits, but it is a big boost to your ability to kind of trigger people's member berries when you include them.
Without hobbits,
feels homely.
It would just feel like generic sci-fi or generic fantasy without the hobbits.
It would feel more that
all the Tolkien copycats and derivatives that came after, they have elves and humans and it's all the same, except they never have hobbits.
But it's kind of funny because that is...
I mean, there's halflings, but...
It's almost like when you read Tolkien's earlier stuff, it really does feel like high fantasy. It feels more like you're reading like mythology.
Swords of Shannara.
Not even that, because that has really like human elements and stuff as well. But like when you, like, I think I read The Children of Húrin long time. I mean, I was a kid, and that felt a lot less like, all right, boys, we're going on an adventure. Let's go. It's like, it didn't feel as like plucky. and adventurous.
More
it
like
felt
mythological.
It felt very mythological, where it's like kind of detached. You're reading about these larger than life characters, these immortal elves, and like the beginnings of men who didn't know what's going on. And yeah, so I think that you could make a show that kind of has a vibe like that.
Yeah.
But having the Harfoots there is a huge boost to its relatability and to 100%. Its feeling human.
Well, it's interesting, and I think this kind of goes to the broader, like, my broader perception of the show is, like, I think why Lord of the Rings is so good is that it's a human story. I mean, like, there's hobbits and dwarves and stuff, but there's, like, a very relatable story, but with this grander mythology behind it, and it's, like, you don't need it to be explicit. You don't need most of the mythology to be there. You just need it to seep through the walls of Moria, and you need it to seep through the walls of Rivendell. You need to feel like there is this grander story, right. But those grander stories are so inhuman that they're not that interesting. Like,
yeah.
Most people that read the Silmarillion will say that it's really fucking dry.
Yes.
And like, it's hard to engage with.
That's why I never read it.
Yeah.
Cause I'm like, I'm not interested in reading an alt history textbook.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
But you know, I feel like maybe it would be interesting if I actually gave it a shot, but that's why I never approached it.
Yeah. And so I think that the show is trying its best, and I think it's doing mostly a good job of straddling those two worlds of the mythology and being explicit in the way that the Lord of the Rings didn't really have to be, but then still giving us like the humanity or the warmth, mm-hmm. or whatever. And I think that that's wasn't as easy as people would think.
Right.
And so I think that's a great strength of the show.
You guys want to talk dwarves?
Yeah, the best.
So speaking of like things feeling kind of, you know, mythological and otherworldly and like being having to ground things, that, you know, that that tension between Durin and Elrond was one of maybe the best part of the show.
I hated it.
What?
I thought it was so contrived.
This always happens. David and I are like, that was so cool. Yeah. And James is like, this is stupid.
Maybe it's because I didn't watch The Hobbit or something, and this is like the most Hobbity aspect of this show.
Like, what?
In, like, in terms of like the movie, The Hobbit.
The movie's The Hobbit. Like, there's a way more dwarf action.
Well, Khazad Dûm is like in The Hobbit, but it's...
And a lot of these dwarf characters and their ancestors and stuff.
Well, Durin, yeah. Like the main hobbit in The Hobbit is the like ancestor. Or the
main dwarf in The Hobbit.
Descendant. Of Durin.
Yeah, this is Durin the fourth or something.
I just didn't buy... It seems super contrived and made up that this person would be like, you haven't called and now I'm really mad. You missed my wedding. Me. I just thought that was like stupid.
I just thought it was so perfect. And I feel like it was like a bit of levity after this like intense, we have this like, he's doing this, like a sacred dwarf ritual and it's serious. And everyone is like, oh, now you are banished forever and blah, blah, blah. And then they like get on the elevator and it's like, I'm mad at you. It's like, okay, it's like it breaks the tension,
I guess.
It also like makes us think about the relationship between elves and other races in a way that we haven't really before.
No.
I mean, like they kind of mention
that,
like,
is interesting.
I
just thought it was the way it came off was really like cross your arms kind of like
but that's dwarves. That's
I mean, like,
you're the central dwarves. They're kind of like over dramatic about this stuff.
Like, you're the king, man. You're supposed to be like mature.
Yo, what king do you know that's actually mature, though?
No one tosses a dwarf! No, I'm serious! We are serious!
All right.
I feel like they capture the essence of what has been presented of dwarves pretty good.
Yeah. Yes. Maybe I just don't like it.
And I liked the humanity of it. I feel like it's a character I can relate to, and like there's like the dynamics with him and his wife that I really enjoyed, and like when she comes in, I'm like, oh, nice. There's like extra warmth to this storyline.
She was very warm.
Yeah, and I really enjoy that, and how his, at Durin's defenses are slowly being worn down, and then he kind of like accepts.
It was just too cartoony for me.
Okay.
I guess, yeah.
I like the cartooniness of it.
I mean, yeah.
So... Dwarven women, no beards, you no, cowards.
Cartoony, yeah.
Well, so, okay, yes. I was reading cowards. A thing where it's, like, that's not actually necessarily canon. That's, like, an interpretation of one person saying that dwarf women have beards.
Because Gimli says it in
yeah.
in the other trilogy. But I don't know if it, how canon
I mean, you could...
They,
you
they
could,
did put some hair prosthetics, like, there's some curly cues on the cheeks.
Wait, really?
There. Yeah, you didn't notice that?
In she the War of the Jewels, all dwarves are described as having beards, including women. In later writings published in The Nature of Middle-earth, Tolkien did not discuss female dwarves when listening to the characters he imagined.
So why do you think they didn't?
It's not just in the movie. It's also in the literature.
No, but it's like, isn't it one character describing it to someone?
What do you mean?
It's like, it's not like the narrator being like, all women have dwarves. It's like a character telling other people.
I don't know. I think that's kind of a reach if you're going to say, just like you're getting information multiple ways from a book and like through a character is that's still like a reliable source of information. So I'd say that's still like validly canon, but I guess you could make the argument it's less tenuous or yeah. It's more tenuous.
It's one of those things where it's like, yeah, it would have been cool if all the women dwarves had beards, but like it doesn't matter.
I don't know why they didn't though. Like, why do you think they were scared to do that?
I think it's because they want to make it easier for
like it's casual more accessible. Audiences
to understand. Because the way I heard it described, and I like this, is that dwarves have two sexes, one gender. And I think that's really kind of fun.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
But like she's on the poster.
Yeah.
Right. And like if you're saying people would be like, well, I'm not watching that shit.
Yeah.
I think it was kind of a missed opportunity to not give them the beards. I want to see how they would have feminized the beards, like how they would have braided them. How would they wear them to look distinct from the men?
I mean, that doesn't
align with what you said about one gender, but.
So Tolkien never explicitly said dwarf women have beards, but he did say that people often mistake them for each other.
Mm-hmm.
So they're hard to tell apart, men and women dwarves, which is like they probably have beards. And then later, that thing from the War of the Jewels, the quote, was written by his son, but his son went through everything with Tolkien and they like worked out the lore together in a lot of cases, especially when writing the like after Lord of the Rings. So I would say that the more canonical thing would be to have the women have beards,
mm-hmm.
but like, I guess there's some justification for having a show where the dwarf women don't have.
I think it's one of those like it's more pragmatic and easier accessibility, and so they probably discussed it and chose that. Maybe it wasn't the best choice.
I think it was just a show accused of being so woke. Do you other cis men in the room think that if they had been bearded, that could have been a form of trans representation?
This is a point that I was going to maybe bring up is that. I mean, should we talk about this now? I think we should talk about it now.
Let's do it.
So, we'll address the sort of like black dwarves, black elves thing in a second. But this was an opportunity for them to be like to normalize the idea that having a beard doesn't necessarily make you more male or female.
Like if you're a woman with a beard, there's no one on TV where you're like, that's me.
Yeah, exactly.
They could have done that.
Exactly. Yeah. So
that's
like
a missed opportunity.
That, yeah, and to me, that's emblematic of the wrong type of representation, or the wrong headed attempt at representation. I feel like
you mean the show in general or this beard thing.
The show in general is guilty of this, and the beard thing is an example. When you look at Game of Thrones, there's black characters, there's Hispanic characters, there's all sorts of characters of different races, but they're geographically located, so it makes sense within the universe. When you go down to the south, they're darker skinned. When they go over to the continent that's basically Asia, then you see more different types of people of color. And it's like, they didn't need to inject this modern idea of like a multicultural diverse society way back into the ancient past.
This is the thing, because people think of, we think old-timey, medieval, that corresponds to what happened here on Earth, which is no diversity, right?
Like, right.
This type of people comes from this region. That type of person comes from that region.
Right.
And Tolkien's world is so racialized, right? Like,
yeah, there's like elves and dwarves and men. Yeah. And
exactly. So I think that's why even people who are completely on board with it being a diverse vision of Lord of the Rings, I've still seen people want, some are like, oh, is there a type of dwarf where they're all black and they live in this part? They want an explanation.
Yeah.
Whereas the approach the show is taking is like, don't think about it. It doesn't matter. Yeah. It just does not matter.
Which is a very modern frame.
But I understand why some people in the context of Lord of the Rings, like they want an explanation or it does matter to them.
Wouldn't that be more offensive to the lore? Like creating this new whole like racial explanation to things?
People will be pissed off for that reason.
Yeah,
then,
I think like no matter what, I think there's a quadrant of people that have like reasonable questions as to like why there is more diverse actors in the show. But I think so many people are just like, I want Middle Earth white because it's always been white.
Well, they have the justification.
The justification
they deploy is that Tolkien imagined this whole universe as a proto, like a pre-Europe, a prehistory of Europe.
Yeah.
And if that's true, then I guess it would have been mostly white. And so.
But that's like how it started. And then it got bigger than that. Like, there's like deserts and like Southlands and like there's
it, well, but it got that's bigger. That's the argument is that if you're gonna bring in darker skinned people, there's nothing wrong with that, but make it make sense.
But the problem is
they're coming from the east.
But the problem is like in the Tolkien world, the people from the east are evil.
Well, this is the root of it. It has like this really deep-seated kind of racism to it, where it's like the lighter skin you are, the more moral you are. The high elves, the blonder you are, the better you are.
Yes, and it's problematic. And I mean, there's a whole thing about the orcs and how like you know Tolkien is guilty of some race essentialism in his writings, where it's like dwarves are like this and elves are like this, but like. I feel like in fantasy, you can do that. You know, we kind of accept that with fantasy to a certain extent. Like, when you're going to make a character for your D&D campaign, you can choose to be a night elf or a wraith or a, you know, gnome. But I mean, and it's like all of these characters have...
traits.
Attributes that we are all fine being like, yeah, most gnomes are like this. You know?
That's just part and parcel.
Because it's fantastical.
But I think it's changed, though. Like, there's a discussion around, are goblins racist? And the new discussion is, yeah, kind of. They're based on, like, the Jewish shyster stereotype and built around that. And, like, so we have to modernize it. And I think D&D is great because it has such a dynamic lore. It's been established, but then we are allowed to create it. And even to, like, the micro level of, like, within your campaign, you're kind of coming up with lore as you fucking go.
Sure.
And so I think that's great. But Tolkien is so iconic and it's been around for a fucking 100 years.
Right.
So it's harder to modernize and people defend it harder. But I think that is sort of silly in the modern world. Like, it's like, those things don't matter. Like, who cares? Like the,
well, they do, but
to me, the best tweet about it was like, how dare they have black elves? Said the people who created white Jesus. Like,
well, yeah, but that's a false equivalency. Like, yes, that's also stupid. It's like you can say both of those things are stupid.
Yes.
You know?
They are both stupid.
Yes. I think any reasonable person agrees. But so it's like, to me, that's like, okay, great. You're attributing this opinion that is held by reasonable people to an unreasonable person and then using that to discredit it. It's like, okay.
But it's really interesting because what you guys are talking about, how like, if you have these physical attributes, they are coupled with these other behavioral attributes, and storytelling is so heavily deploys that. Like when you look at the villains in 101 Dalmatians Disney cartoon, who do the henchmen look like? They look like lower class British people with like hook noses and they're chinless.
And
we just see them and we're like, oh, evil. You're a bad guy. You have a twirly mustache. Like,
right.
That's a bad guy. And if you look at a, what are they called? Not a brute, like the, a barbarian, right? You're like, this guy's huge. He's got to be dumb. You can't have high intelligence and high strength.
Yeah.
Like these things go together, right? And as a game like D&D, like you're going to sacrifice, you're going to be squishier, but be able to do damage. You can have higher intelligence, but you're not that strong or durable.
And that's why
they're different players. Like otherwise you would just be OP.
Right, but that's also an opportunity to subvert things like that by saying, okay, we have this big, dumb, like seemingly dumb barbarian, but he actually really likes reading. You know, it's like, and you can do things like that because you're playing with these stereotypes that still exist. If we just break down all of those stereotypes, any elf and any human could be completely the same. It's like, well, okay, fun.
But because you cease to have a reason to have these different groups.
Exactly.
But I think the thing that's hard is like, you can't please everyone. And like, if we do this thing where we give explanations to why the racial differences or why the mixing, like there's going to be just as many people that are like, this is fucking stupid. And so like at one point you have to make a decision and you got to stick with it. And it's like, they made the decision to just like normalize.
Sure.
And like,
the thing that I land on with this is that, look, it's good to have representation because this is already sort of like, a bastardization of Lord of the Rings, you know, it's like it's on its own timeline.
Oh, how dare you?
Well, not because of the race thing. I just mean because it's Amazon.
He's rolling in his grave.
It's Amazon, and they're making a show to make a bunch of money off of this license that they bought. So it's like, okay, look, I'm not looking at this as like, oh, this is Peter Jackson who really, really cared about the source material, and he wants to like make something and bring this like hero's journey, like really interesting and good moral story to the world. They want to make money by making a Lord of the Rings franchise thing.
Subscribe.
Okay, so it's already a bastardization of Lord of the Rings. So at that point, sure, let's throw some Black and Asian people in here. You know, why not? Let's have the good representation. So, like, I, on that level, I totally get it. And I'm happy that people who aren't white can watch this and see themselves in it. That's great. You know, that we've talked about this many times.
But
on
you
podcast.
Don't, you don't want there to be more people in the world who like Lord of the Rings? Like, don't you want it to just
exactly,
more?
Exactly, exactly. But at the same time, we can't, like, I can't just gloss over the fact that this is not being true to Tolkien's vision of, like, he looked around and at all of these cultures' mythologies, and he's like, we don't really have one of those for Britain or for, like, you know, Europe in general. I guess
other parts of
Germanic, there's all sorts of, but mostly like England and Britain for sure. So he's like, we don't really have a mythology. I'm going to create something that, like, feels like it could be a mythology for the UK.
But that's how it started. Like, that's like before where he got, like, that's like the origin point, but it got so much bigger than just British.
Well,
mythology.
Not really. Like, what? And now it is, but not before this point, it didn't.
But
it,
even like, he's a person writing from his perspective at that time. And if he were alive writing today, he wouldn't write it the same way. So
sure. To me, this is how I looked at it. It's like, okay, this is meant to be British / you know, European mythology. It's like making a mythological tale set in feudal China or like the Incan Empire and having random white people in it. It's like, you could do that, but why? So it's like, and it would feel weird, you know? So it's like, that's how I'm looking at it. Mm-hmm. If it, you know, this is what it was intended to be, and now we're broadening it and including more people, and that's good in one sense and kind of annoying in another sense.
I just think that we shouldn't take an old British guy who's been dead for 100 years' opinion on race too literally. I don't think he has the best opinions on.
Yeah,
I don't think I don't think anyone's taking his opinion on race. I think they're just
they'll code it as, like, you know, his original, like, authorial intent and like that's what he intended. That's how he wrote it. And it's like, well, yeah, you're taking his views on race and like bringing that into the modern world. Was it exegesis?
This is really kind of the same argument as, like, do we need to make Superman black or something? You know, where it's like, it's the argument of, should we take these old things that people are used to and change them so that now they are a different thing?
Mm-hmm.
Or instead, should we write new stories to reflect to reflect how things are now and to put forward what we think should be put out into the world,
100%.
Instead of trying to take this old stuff and be like, these people back then, they were bad. They were not as
it's
good as we are
of
now.
It's a clash of two forces in Hollywood.
We know what the right thing is now, and they were bad.
The
so
one
now
force in Hollywood
fix,
is...
We need to fix that.
But, like, that's so... I feel like, yes, perfect world. People go to see new IPs just as much as they go to see, like, established franchises.
Exactly.
But, like... No, like if we have like the stones of Jesus, like no, the stones of like El Shaddar, like
versus
Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power, like people aren't going to go see the Elf stones of
for
power.
Sure. And this is why I kind of like it has to be a nuanced thing. Yeah. It has to be a nuanced approach. Like if Amazon decided to make an original fantasy series, would they make less money and would they get less eyes on? Yes. I wouldn't fucking care in that point because it's Amazon. I don't care how much money they're making, you know?
Yeah.
So I understand the capitalistic reasons for them doing what they're doing. You know, we need to exploit this franchise that we have the rights to while also broadening our woke appeal to as many people as possible. So that we have the cross section of the, of like we're broadening our audience as much as possible. And, yes, that's the reality of the situation, but that doesn't mean that I can't criticize the fact that they're only really doing this if like on one hand they seem like they care about the franchise and they want to do right by Lord of the Rings, and on the other hand they're just kind of injecting this stuff in because it'll broaden their appeal, and I'm like, okay. So anyways,
that's what I'm saying. It's a clash of two forces in Hollywood, where it's like they're conservative and they want to reuse IPs, but they also want to, you know, appeal to America today.
It's not easy to ride this middle line and to be in this like gray zone and to understand that you don't have to side completely with one side or the other.
That's fair.
It's hard to be in the middle and be like, you know what? This is kind of annoying and inconsistent that there are random black dwarves and black elves and black hobbits, mm-hmm. and there's no in-universe explanation yep. for that. While at the same time being like, this is good that we have representation yeah. for more people in a media that sure. is this popular. Like,
I think,
fine.
For me, a part of the discussion that I don't think gets talked about enough is whose responsibility is it to fix this? We keep blaming corporations like Amazon for failing to straddle the line, but like, isn't it us that should stop watching shitty versions of these established franchises and spend our money on new IPs?
Well, that's exactly why I didn't go to see The Hobbit.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not paying... Not giving you money for this.
I saw the first one and then I was like, I'm not seeing that.
I think we create the market that has made it that the MCU and these like recycling franchises thrive in. And we need to be responsible enough to go see the more interesting non-established IP so that's where we get is these cool new fantasy worlds that have explanations why there's more diverse representation. Yeah. And then we kind of move away from this discussion into our Star Trek future.
Yeah.
Speaking of moving away from this discussion.
Wait. Before you said that, I want to put up Wheel of Time as an excellent example of a fantasy world that has justified, multiple races mm-hmm. of humans in it. Because Wheel of Time, it's indicated, I don't know if this is in the books, but in the show at the very least, they show a bunch of like skyscrapers that are like covered with moss and stuff. Mm. So it's indicated that this is far, 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 far in the future. Many civilizations of humans have come and gone.
Well, that's the thing.
As the wheel turns. And so it's like, okay, it makes sense for this society to be made up of a diverse mix of multicultural people or whatever. And so that's great. Let's do that. Let's make it make sense in the universe so I don't get taken out.
Yeah. This whole thing highlights how those people who are complaining about the later Star Wars movies were really just racist. Because In a sci-fi context, especially where it's like not only is there globalization, it's intergalactic.
Yeah.
There's going to be so much diversity. And people were so mad that there's like too many Asians and non-white people in Star Wars. It's like, of course it would be like that.
Right.
There's no reason for it not to be like that. It's actually more realistic if there's more diversity in Star Wars.
It was so frustrating to have me trying to criticize the sequels on what I saw as valid grounds and being lumped in with these fucking idiots who are mad that there's a black guy in a stormtrooper costume.
Yeah.
Fucking deal with it.
Yeah.
Okay? There are multiracial people in the... It's a galaxy.
It's a galaxy.
There are aliens. There's gonna be black people and Asian people or whatever.
Green skin, okay.
There's
black
no
skin.
Reason. And they were like, but they're space Nazis, so it'll be only white. And I'm like, no, they're human Nazis. They don't like aliens, but they're all humans. It doesn't like... It's like hair color to them, you know?
Yeah.
The Empire is woke, okay? Deal with it.
Yeah. All right, y'all. It's time to go to hit picks and nitpicks.
Nitpicks.
Nitpick. The world was so young and never seen a sunrise yet. And then like 10 seconds later, they're having a discussion at sunset.
Yeah, it was dumb.
I was like, what is going on?
That was stupid. That was stupid.
Yeah. It felt like they were like getting mythological with it, which is cool. But at the same time, it's like...
It wasn't really mythological.
So do you sleep or...
I don't know.
They were in the Undying Lands at the beginning. That's Valinor.
Oh, I see.
Because, wait, is it?
Yeah,
because
yeah,
when the
so.
Tree dies, yeah.
That's Valinor.
Yep.
Yeah. So I sort of understood that, but at the same time, I was like, I feel like you shouldn't show us Valinor. Like, it should still be, like, mysterious, because once we see what it's like to live eternal, it's just kind of like, oh, so you just have the same
thing. And there's still dickhead bullies there?
yeah, exactly.
What the hell kind of paradise is that?
The big problem I have is that it's so easy to comprehend. Like, Valinor should be, like, bigger than our understanding, bigger than our imagination,
right.
And to see it be like, yeah, it just looks like fucking Middle Earth.
Is it heaven
brighter.
Or is it America?
It's supposed to be. Well, this is the funny thing.
Or is that the same thing? God bless.
This is the funny thing with Tolkien's mythology is that there's the like spiritual realm where like Ilúvatar lives and the rest of the Ainur, but a bunch of the Ainur descended into Middle Earth, or the Arda is the name of the planet. And they live. What then? They can't leave. So they are there as these like mystical beings, but they are embodied and they like go and do stuff physically and
like
stuff.
Like the Kardashians.
And that's Valinor. Valinor is where the Ainur live. There's two types. There's Valar and Maiar. And the Valar are like the more powerful ones. And when you die, you go to a specific hall in Valinor the halls of Mandos, where you wait until like the apocalypse, which is a bit like, it's like Ragnarok.
Yeah,
Riley has this little smirk on his face when he's saying all this, like he's like ashamed, like he's like opening up his robe a little bit.
It's
and like, we're like
it's a smirk, but it's also like I love it. I'm just like I love reading.
See,
about all
it's
this.
Really cool, and it works as a book. But I'm so glad it's not going to be in
exactly. But that's yeah. that's why I'm saying you shouldn't show Valinor.
Yeah, you should not.
Like
show it.
It's fun to read about it yeah. and like and conceptualize cool. this like otherworldly stuff. But once you show it, then the magic's gone.
Yeah,
same
it's just
thing.
A hall. It yeah. looks like a fucking
nitpick. Where the hell is she hiding this damn sword? She's like swimming around,
huh? It's a dagger.
Yeah, but she's swimming around. She doesn't even have anything but this simple dress on. And then sometimes the sword's there, and sometimes it's gone. I have no idea where she's holstering this thing.
Mm. Well, I mean, later they show it just in her belt, but I guess we didn't really notice it being in her belt until that point.
Kind of along the same lines, they really need to design a better way for elves to hold their bows. The amount of fiddling he does with like putting his bow on his shoulder and around his back and stuff. Boring elf.
Boring elf.
The first like episode, there's like at least Legolas. 5 to 10 times he's just like fumbling with his
bow.
No,
he does that cool flippy thing. He's like holding it and then he flips it so that his hand goes in between the bow and the string.
Bro,
and
just like make a clip on your armor and just like...
That would be cool.
Like a leaf-shaped clip.
Something.
He never played God of War.
Yo, hit pick though, that armor, that the face armor, that was cool.
Yeah.
That was
the
sick.
Green knight looking kind of.
Oh yeah, who had that?
That was the elves, but the ones that were watching over the... people.
Arondir?
Oh yeah, they're whatever they're called.
I like that armor.
I forget what they're called. They're not cool. Rangers, but in the beginning with the analogy with the rocks, why does a boat float? Because a rock sinks because it's looking down, and a boat floats because it's looking up. I'm like,
what if you flip over the rock?
That is the
I like
dumbest
that.
Thing.
I liked it.
So while it was happening, I'm like, okay, this it feels really awkward and weird, but fine. But then at the end, I see why they did it, because they're like, she's deciding whether to go into the Undying Lands or whether to stay, and she's like, oh, no, I'm not like the boat looking up, but like the rock, I'm looking down. It's a weird analogy, though, because like sinking down is shown as negative, but it's like this is the right thing to do, is go back. And it's
because what he whispered,
they did a 90-degree turn. It's not up and down, yeah. It's forward and back.
Like what he whispered in her ear was like, you don't know the
right.
bounds.
She's like, how do I know which one?
It.
So like, I feel like they could have kept that line. How do I know which way I'm supposed to go? They just needed to change that stupid boat rock analogy.
Yeah, I don't like that.
I guess they really awkward. Wanted to tie it into like she's literally standing on a boat.
Awkward. And there's a couple examples of this kind of awkward writing. I was tipped off to this by Brandon Sanderson, the author of Way of Kings. And a bunch of other stuff. They noted that when Celebrimbor and Elrond get to Moria, he's like, Celebrimbor is like, oh, I really admire how the dwarves treat the rock. It's like, you know, they treat it with love and care, like for an aging parent. And he's like, they're elves. They don't have aging parents. Why would he use this analogy?
Oh, that's bad.
Anyways.
Did you guys see the... when they're talking about respecting the rock, like sometimes you dig and sometimes you leave it alone. Did you read that as a foreshadowing of the Balrog?
Yeah, for sure.
I didn't when I heard it.
Oh, really?
But I see how it is.
Yeah, that was kind of cool. And I like, you know, whatever, beardless dwarf women, black dwarves, blah, blah, blah. But I thought that character was really cool. Her accent was lacking.
Yes.
But she, I liked her. And I liked that she was there to kind of give a more warm element to Durin. And she talked about singing. And then in the preview for the rest of the season, we see her like singing. And I'm like, okay, that's going to be a cool scene. Probably.
I feel like they gave away her dying at some point in the preview for the rest of the season. I don't know. I don't know if it's true, but
you just spoiled it for me.
I think that's, I shouldn't have said anything.
I didn't know. I didn't see that.
God, go back 30 seconds and remove what I just said. My hit pick is outside the show. I don't think
what
so.
What is it?
This is the preview. Is the hilarious 1-star reviews that exist for this show. So I read 110.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I read 110 reviews.
You did.
I wanted to see like how much mention like woke, politics, feminism, shit like that. It's about 60% of 1-star reviews will mention like, this show is woke, wokeism, woke fest. But there's 3 specific quotes that are not even like exactly that, but they're so fucking good. One of them is, the men are helpless, the women are self-sufficient. That's a huge problem with this show.
The men are helpless, which is bad. The women are self-sufficient, which is also bad. Yeah.
This one was fantastic. If you thought the NHS COVID track and trace was a waste of money, well, wait until you see this.
Oh my God. Wait, that first one, that's similar to being like in the newer Star Wars, all the villains are white, yeah, and all the good guys are diverse. I could see that's like a similar kind of gripe.
And it's like, well,
but then the men aren't helpless though. They don't feel like the like born elf dude. I don't feel like he's helpless.
Yeah. The women are definitely self-sufficient.
But I mean, Elrond and Celebrimbor are being pretty active. Look, these are dumb.
But the stranger's helpless as fuck. He's just laying there.
Here's my favorite one, because I don't fucking get it, and it feels like a very personal attack to this person, a very deep-seated hatred that this person has. This will go down the list of complete wastes of money, along with Track and Trace, okay, sure, the what? Millennium Dome, and any money Jim Carrey has ever received.
Okay, buddy.
Jeez, we just learned so much about this individual.
Have ever received? You didn't like anything Jim Carrey did? Wow. What a crazy Yahoo. Teaching my kids to do silly voices and faces. Yeah. Be serious.
Cool it with the eyebrows, buddy.
Yeah, so that's my favorite thing about this show is the existence of that one line.
Jesus.
Man.
Hit pick. Oh. In the opening like prologue, when you see that eagle getting taken out by a Nazgul, that was fucking awesome.
That was pretty cool.
I was like, okay, I'm here for this.
Yeah. I mean, you always want to see more eagles.
Yep.
But don't show us too many. Because then you'll ruin them. That was good. Hit pick for me. I mean, it's sort of a hit pick, but nitpick. I don't know. It's the part where Gil-galad is announcing that Sauron is defeated and like they're gonna go to the Undying Lands. And I was like, these brave warriors have proven beyond a shadow of any doubt that our days of wars are over and Sauron is definitely dead. Yes, very good, very good. Yes, we've done it, elves. I don't know. I just thought that was like,
well, that's part of her character too, right? And it is reminiscent of the original trilogy, how Gondor is like decaying,
right?
Because men were too.
Mordor is right there; you can see it, and they're just like, "Ah, it's fine."
Exactly. They were too lazy and they were too complacent, and they just like they just didn't lead it like and give it the attention they were supposed to. And that's exactly what's happening here, right?
Right.
She's like, I don't know, I just want to be really sure. Like, it's close enough.
Yeah.
Nitpick: why were the elves subtitled once? There's one part where the elves say something, like an elf says something to another elf, and they subtitle it. And the rest of the show, there's no subtitles. So it's like, does that mean that the elves are not speaking Elvish the rest of the show? They're speaking common tongue?
I absolutely hate when shows do this.
What the hell? So either they should always be subtitled because they're always speaking Elvish.
So 100% they're speaking Quenya. I don't know how you say it. But like all the elves would be speaking that to each other, not Westron, which is what we hear as English. You know, the men speak Westron. So like, I hate when shows do this where it's like you have characters who are clearly speaking another language, but we're hearing English for the sake of the audience. And then for a second, somebody speaks in the language that.
Yeah, there's ways to do it. Like, you know, Hunt for the Red October, where it's like there's a Russian ship and like the English people, when they're separate, they speak all in English, so that's easier. But then when they cross over.
Yeah, when you hear the Russians talk to the English.
And they'll do good transitions, sure. Like, where it's like, oh, wow, okay, yes, I understand.
Yeah.
But they still must talk in Russian accents.
Well, Scottish-Russian accents, because
you're not going to attempt that.
Why not? Why not Russian or Scottish?
Here's another nitpick. It's like, when her swords, like she's supposed to surrender her sword on the boat, everyone's surrendering their weapons to those like maidens, and then she doesn't. She eventually, when she finally lets it go, it makes a sound, like it's just floating in between their hands. But she lets it go, you hear like a shing sound, as if it's just been like taken out of a sheath. It was like every time, it's like every time a gun or a sword is handled, that must be a sound effect. Like if I have to hand you a pistol, it's like.
Well, it's because Foley artists get paid by the sound effects.
Do they?
No. Sort of nitpicker. I don't know. I hated the fact that the comet came out of the like. I hated the fact that that's how it happens.
Like it comes out of Valinor.
No, it's not Valinor. It's the heaven or like the actual spiritual and metaphysical outside of time.
That's where the boat was going.
No. When Gandalf the Stranger crashes in the comet.
Yeah.
I just hated how they did it. Cause I'm like, this isn't how, like, It's like, that's like, you know, like God and the angels, they're up there in the clouds.
Yeah.
And they crashes down to Earth. I'm like, okay.
They should have done a Terminator
style.
It's
like a dimensional thing. It should be like, oh, like reality warps and stuff.
Terminator style.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then sure. There's a Gandalf, sphere.
Exactly.
Gandalf lands with his like fist on the ground.
Yeah. And he's nude and he stands up.
If they did a perfect copy of Terminator,
Bilbo
I would
Baggins.
Happy. Yeah.
Come with me if you want to live.
Oh yeah, I'm super into that. Somehow there's a garbage truck somewhere, yeah. Sure.
I fucking love this. Yeah. I love this so much.
Hit pick for me is the two girls, the two Harfoot girls carting Gandalf around in the cart, yeah, while he's like unconscious and they're like, "What are you doing?" "Oh no." And then they like let him go by accident. Like, "Oh, go get him." I was like, "Oh, this feels yeah, fun. This feels like fun Hobbit hijinks in Lord of the Rings."
Yeah. Oh, another maybe reason that this could be Sauron is that he does evil things. Like he does these acts of aggression, the stranger, right? Like he's like the trees are bending over and, you know, powerful things are happening, but that could go either way because he's just in the new body and doesn't know what he's doing yet. But what about when he does something and then miles away her dad's foot just breaks?
Like, oh, I don't think that's related. That's a coincidence. I feel like that's a setup
I thought that was like indicating that he caused
No. I think maybe, but I don't think that's how it was framed. It didn't seem that way to me. I feel like that was like, because she was supposed to help. Because she wasn't there, then he had to do it himself and he broke his leg.
Okay.
I really like how
later the stranger's going to come heal him.
Oh, I could see that.
That's or maybe that Persian chick. The healer?
The Bronwyn? Maybe. But really then that would mean that the men would know about the hobbits and that would be a whole thing. I don't know.
I really like the way that in that sequence, the broken foot, it's at first, but when it happens, you're like, oh, that sucks. Oh man, he's going to have to heal up and do that. But then the realization that they're a migrant people and they're going to keep moving and they've already established like they have to move.
Yes.
It was like, oh, this is a really big deal. Like he's immobile now.
Yeah.
So yeah, when Gandalf heals him, it'll be great.
And that's a hit pick on another level because the origin of the hobbits is that they came over from the other side of the Misty Mountains and settled in the Shire. So they're saying, we have to migrate, we're going to move, which is like, canonically, that's what they did. And that, you know, that's why it doesn't bother me that there's like, the hobbits aren't supposed to be here in the Third Age yet. It's like, okay, but it's actually, they didn't pop out of the ground.
Yeah.
They were not around. Recorded. Yeah. So they're going, they were nomadic and they were moving around all the time and hiding. So that's why no one knew it about them. They're going to go settle in the Shire and stay there. And that's when they kind of enter into the world. So that was good.
Questions. What do the dwarves have in that box?
Silmaril probably.
Oh.
The jewels.
Okay.
The Silmaril are a set of jewels.
Dragon Balls?
No, they're like magic stones. I don't even know.
Are those going to be used to make is that like the source material from which they're going to make the rings? Like they're going to melt one of those down or something?
No.
Because that's what it kind of seemed like to me. Like, oh, they have the raw material. In terms of like the plot setup of we're going to make a forge. Oh,
gems crafted by Feanor. He's in one of the very early important elves. From some essence of the two trees of Valinor. Before the First Age, they're most prized of all the wonders crafted by the elves and were coveted by many. So, yeah.
You think that's what it is? And you already spoke to one of my other questions, is which is the character they're introducing at the end of the second episode that on the ship, that silhouette? You think it's just a Numenor person?
Yeah, because this is a whole thing.
That's so just like the high elf
the
version
Numenorians,
of
humans. They weren't around in the First Age. There were men, but they were like inconsequential.
Okay.
Then... Elrond's brother, who was a half elf, chose to be mortal, and he had men descendants, and they were like the best men, and they were like, you know, because they had some elf in them, they were like they race essentialism. They, you know, were good. The good men and all the other men were like bands of horrible people,
corruptible.
So Iluvatar himself,
Iluvatar,
raised an island in the middle of the ocean for them to go and have a cool kingdom there, and so they were a seafaring race of men who like were legit about their shit.
Too legit to quit.
And later they come, they might. Well,
sound like the Dutch.
There's a whole thing that happens. Numenor sinks back into the sea later, and they migrate to Middle Earth and found Arnor and Gondor, and so that's where those places come from. But anyways, the Numenorians are like pre. Gondor humans live a very long time, hundreds of years.
The Dunedain are Numenorean.
Yes, they're descended.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it now. Aragorn. I get it.
Yep. That's where Aragorn comes from. Anyways, yeah, it's probably the Numenoreans. I don't know.
Cool.
I'm out of nitpicks.
Nitpick Galadriel. They're on the raft at the end of episode two, and she's pulling on a string, like she's pulling on a rope on the raft as if it's doing something.
I was noticing that.
She's talking to Halbrand, but at the same time kind of like looking back at him. I'm working on something. I'm steering our raft.
But she's also like, punctuating the conversation like, I'm going this way. Pull.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, what do you think you're doing?
Nothing's happening.
You're on a fucking raft.
It's supposed to be the rudder, I guess.
It's dumb. And, that was weird. My nitpicks got mixed up. And then in that same scene, like, later, the storm is happening, and she's, like, holding onto the stick, and she's like, bind yourself to me! And what was her plan there? Like, why do they need to bind themselves?
Well, she knows to look up, so then she can keep him floating.
What?
He's joking.
I'm joking.
I didn't understand what her strategy was there. And then, right, as I was like, wait, why? Lightning strikes the boat and explodes. I'm like, wait, what? Is this a thing that would happen?
That could happen.
A little tiny raft in a lightning storm in the sea where there's waves and stuff way higher than them. And then lightning strikes that and explodes something?
Oh, it could explode.
Yeah?
It could explode, yeah.
It's okay. A world with magic.
Don't I don't know. It was just like a sequence of kind of confusing things, and I was like, huh? And then he swims down to save her. She's unconscious. They get to the surface, and she's super fully conscious. I'm like, oh, let's go swim. I'm like, okay, what? I don't know. Yeah. The end of that scene was just so confusing for a number of reasons.
Yeah.
And that was annoying. So it's a nitpick. Also a weird mid-pick, I guess. It felt weird to kind of have basically like a horror movie in the middle of an Lord of the Rings thing.
With
when the
worm?
Orc shows up in the house, yeah. And they're like hiding and they're like, and it's like,
yeah, but that was similar to when the hobbits are trying to run away from the orcs that are gonna eat them, and then they run into the forest and meet the Ents.
Where they're hiding underneath, like from the Nazgul.
That's true. That felt pretty horror-y. Yeah. Okay. But then, what, orcs are super strong?
He was throwing her across the room. I was like, what's up with that?
He tossed the table like it was nothing.
And
I'm
then,
like, what?
The thing that annoyed me was when the kid was hiding in the cupboard at the beginning of the sequence. It was like, Mom, like, I'm hiding, closes the door. I'm like, why didn't they just book it? Why didn't they just run right then?
Yeah, exactly.
And then just keep hiding.
Do you know why that orc is so strong? It's because they share properties with the Jedi and the Sith. And based on the amount there are, they split that
right.
strength up. And so there's only like a few thousand orcs currently,
yeah,
so you know they're
yeah.
really fucking strong.
I really appreciate you criticizing this key element of the sequels. Thank
All
you,
right,
David.
I think let's wrap it up for
final
for
nitpick.
This. Okay, go.
Season one was filmed in New Zealand, which is proper.
Oh, they said nitpick.
Well, the nitpick is that season two is going to be in the UK. Save money.
That's a mistake.
Tolkien will stop rolling in his grave, but Jackson will begin. He's not dead.
Apparently, there are some mountains in England, but they're all very short. So,
see, it'll be a lot of CG enhancement, is my guess.
That'll be fine.
That's like one of the things that made the Lord of the Rings trilogy feel so cool is that they like actually filmed in New Zealand and there's like such brilliant rolling.
Yeah, but the
landscape.
Graphics sucked back then, so they don't need to do that anymore.
Oh, like, yeah, let's CGI everything.
Exactly.
They already did. Attack of the CGI. Clones is back.
Yes.
All right. We have something else to talk about though, which
Wait,
is
do we?
There was no episode last week.
Oh, yeah.
And
we lost it.
Not for lack of trying. We actually recorded one of the best episodes
so
ever.
Yes.
It was a great episode. It was on Annihilation, which is one of Riley's favorite movies. It was a great conversation. You guys will never hear it because the audio didn't record, so we couldn't release it.
Yep.
And but we never tweeted or anything to tell you that, so we're sorry.
It was so good. It was the episode that I was most excited for. Annihilation is one of my favorite movies.
Don't even ask us. We'll never do it again because it doesn't work that way.
Well, no,
the video
I wanted to
audio on like Flowplane or something.
I thought there was zero audio.
I think the camera that was recording would have the audio. So I can see bars on
I
it.
Thought
so
I
it would
asked
be really
that.
Shitty. But no, but like
we wouldn't want to use that.
You wouldn't want to use that for like a real episode.
So
for, like,
I have my slogan and my rating for Annihilation.
Okay, sure.
Okay. Slogan, exploring the themes of self-destruction, grief, identity, and the unknowable has never been so thrilling and gender inclusive. Lessons on how to make an excellent all-women movie and any kind of movie can be taken from this alternative interpretation of Jeff Vandermeer's also very good novel. I gave it a 9.25 out of 10, just so you know what you're missing. It was it's an amazing movie.
I had a long and pretentious slogan that ended with a 7.4. I liked it. I think the visual splendor, the atmosphere, the alien and the actual cosmic horror are like 10 out of 10. But yeah. I think the dialogue and like the interpersonal drama was the weakest part of the film.
I remember this stupid shit. I had the stupid slogan, science shiz, killed by a grizz. I forgot how good this movie is. 8.75.
That's the best one.
That was hilarious. You guys should have been there.
So yeah, use that information to imagine what an amazing episode that was.
It was really good. We talked about
sorry.
A lot of stuff.
All right. That's enough.
Yeah, we'll do fans.
I think we've been going for like close to 2 hours.
Now playing next week.
Yeah, we will.
Next week we're doing Galaxy Quest.
Galaxy Quest!
I'm so excited.
I'm excited to see it, actually.
Have you never seen it since you turned it off as a kid or you didn't watch it?
I never watched it. I think it was on in a room I was in for like half an hour, but no.
It's the best Star Trek movie.
All right, guys. See you next week. You can tweet us at TJMPod. You can email us hello at theyrejustmovies.com.
.com.
You gotta stick your tongue out when you say .com.
Hello.
Love
see
you.
Ya.